"Dear God," prayed a Breton fisherman, "be good to me. The sea is so wide, and my boat is so small." Twice in Matthew's Gospel, the scene is a storm on the Sea of Galilee, with 12 fearful disciples adrift in a very small fishing boat. Here, the similarities between those two stories end. In the first story, the disciples followed Jesus into the boat. In the second story, Jesus made them get in the boat without him. In the first story, the storm terrifies them, and they wake saying, "Lord, save us, we are perishing." They wake Jesus. And in response, Jesus questions them, saying, "Why are you afraid, you of little faith?" In the second story, Jesus terrifies them. They cry out in fear, saying, "It's a ghost." And in response, Jesus assures them, "Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid." But also in these two stories, we have to do with two different kinds of fear. And that's what we're going to spend the morning considering. The first sort of fear actually surfaces before the disciples follow Jesus into the boat. A scribe approaches him and declares that he wants to follow Jesus wherever he goes. Jesus cautions the man, worrying that he will no longer be at rest in the world. Then another says he will follow Jesus, but only after he has first buried his father. As far as we can tell, neither of these two disciples followed Jesus. But the disciples do. They went after Jesus into the boat to begin to row. For a moment, we are allowed to think that these 12 are the fearless ones. And suddenly a violent storm blows up with waves so great that the boat is swamped. The disciples believe themselves to be perishing, and I am here to tell you from personal experience, their fears are well founded. I have never been so afraid for my life than when I was in a boat in the ocean, land in sight. The motor cuts out, and there are 10-foot waves. And I didn't have a life jacket on. You really think you are perishing. So awakened from his sleep to save them, what does Jesus say? "Why are you afraid, O ye of little faith?" Why are ye afraid? Seen from one angle, the fear of the scribe and the grieving son and the would-be sailors are all one fear. The fear of some external circumstance whose power is experienced as a threat to human existence. In the case of the men who turn back, that circumstance is discipleship, a threat. In the case of the disciples, having taken the first step into the boat with Jesus, a storm reveals these men to still be living as though death had dominion. And as though death's attendant chaos has the power to shake their trust in the one who has the power over wind and waves and death itself. In relation to this first sort of fear, you and I likely live somewhere along the continuum between Jesus. Suffice it to say, at the crossroads, and on those nights when our very souls are required of us, sometimes our fears get the best of us. On one hand, you want to open yourself to God's hand on your life, taking you where you may not want to go. But then you think. You pray, on the other hand, oh my God, the things that could go wrong, the things I don't know. In fact, even if you are not facing right now life at the crossroads, but only the high anxiety of entering a room full of strangers, because you're a stranger here among us, no doubt the mind's incredible ability to imagine catastrophe has caused many of us to walk away from the destiny that was ours for the daring. Why are you afraid? In the little matters, in the day-to-day anxiety-provoking choices, I think we might say to Jesus that we do not know why we are afraid. In fact, many of us are probably taking pills for being afraid. But we simply choose to deal with the demons we know. Terra firma. We would rather bury the dead because the dead can no longer surprise us. Just under the surface of our playing it safe is the little bigger fear of failing. Or as Karl Barth put it, fear is the anticipation of a supposedly certain defeat. So we don't even give it a try. Or we make a list of what sounds to us for all the world like reasonable excuses. We postpone the decision with the fiction that this is not a big time in our lives. We'll come back to it. Choose this day, says Jesus. And we choose to stay put. That's on land. But once on the sea, then there are other fearful circumstances that have less to do with choice and more to do with chance. Why are you afraid? Maybe it is that you have no control over those factors that have caused you to leave or be left by one place or position or person, and you find yourself with only the freedom to choose your response. Dread or great expectation. Maybe it is instead the case that you, like the disciples, have freely stepped in the boat, but is then overtaken by some chaos with the power you believe to take you down. This is often when we use the word fate, not faith, fate to describe what has befallen us. According to Glenn Kinder, fate is something that comes upon us from without. Often strange and uninvited, always at enmity with our personal being, irresistible and inescapable. Be it metaphorical waves crashing on us and over our little boat, or the invasion of our body by illness, disease, fear grips us. And even if it should happen, that our life is not ultimately threatened. The person we thought we were blithely becoming is endangered, exposed, helpless, defenseless. This is why we are afraid. Now, you would think in those circumstances, Jesus would be our personal pastoral caregiver. Especially when, on the continuum of human fear, you're on the verge of perishing rather than asking like a reasonable person. person if you could take a rain check on that discipleship thing. Especially in extremis, you expect a little godly sympathy. Apparently, this is not a realistic expectation. In the first story, Jesus is sleeping through our high anxiety. In the second story, he has sent us into the storm and the high seas without him. And when, in the first story, he wakes the disciples' petitions for help, he calmly responds with a question whose answer is obvious to those of us living in the clutches of death. Why are you afraid, you of little faith? Is he kidding? But notice that he asks this of the disciples. He asks this of those who have taken the first step, who have gotten into the boat, who have left their former lives to follow him on the high seas. These are the characters who seemed to trust him completely as long as the seas were calm and the sky was blue. That Jesus was as good as asleep posed no problem until the external circumstances caused the disciples to react with fear, as though death had dominion and Jesus were as good as dead, and they were without help or hope in the world. Why are you afraid, you of little faith? He asks this also of us, who have no need of him and even forget that he is with us in the boat until a storm comes up and overwhelms us, and fear is our lot. Fear is our response to things in the world that would keep us from the life we have been given by God to lead, causing what little faith we have to vanish. Therefore, Jesus speaks first as our critic before he acts as our Savior. To the first fear, the fear that keeps us from taking the first step, or the same fear writ large that keeps us in life and in death from putting our whole trust in God, he simply asks us to think about it. Just think about it before he calms the winds and the waves of our storm-tossed lives. The second fear, as Karl Barth is famous for saying, is the only worthwhile fear. In the second story, Jesus has put the disciples in the boat without him. Evening falls, the storm comes, the waves batter the little boat, the wind is against them, and they are pulled farther and farther and farther away from him, who is their help. Yet nothing is said at this point in the story about their fear. Only that they are in this state until morning, early morning, when Jesus comes walking across the water toward them. Here, Matthew is not interested in hearing about their enlightened take on what is scientifically possible, by the way. He is speaking theologically. The boat is the early church after the resurrection. When Jesus' followers are weathering rough storms, persecution, and conflict, and death without his earthly presence. In the midst of a multitude of external circumstances threatening them, we read that they are terrified not by these things, but by Jesus. By what appears to be a ghost of Jesus coming toward them. And I will let Bart take over from here. This is so good, really. It is a fact, he says, that when we are really afraid, we do not have to fear this or that thing, but God. Mere fear of life, deep and strong though it may be, is like the fear of a child in the night. It has no meaning, for it is not caused by awe, but by agitation. Such fear drives us from one anxiety and disturbance to the fear of being responsible for our short life, the fear of the eternal God, of his nearness, and of the judgment in which we stand, this fear is not caused by the night, but is caused by God coming toward us in Jesus Christ. It is only here, with due respect for our fear of life, that it is really worthwhile to be afraid. As Jesus walked toward them, the disciples cried out in fear, but immediately, Matthew tells us, immediately Jesus spoke to them and said, "Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid." What a different response to fear. When the fear that overtakes us issues from awe and not agitation, then it is the God who has come close to us in Jesus Christ who is our only comfort. Then the assurance of his word spoken from the pulpit or in a hospital room or across the table or on the edge of an open grave is all that we have. And my friends, it is enough. It is enough for your storm-tossed life and mine to go on. Having reached the limit of all that we fear, where God is revealed to us, we are no longer afraid of this or the next thing, but of God. Well, finally, Matthew addresses the doubt that still dogs those who have weathered the storm, assured of God's presence, or almost done. In that assurance, Peter alone takes the next step. Once again, his walk on the water has less to do with the paranormal and more to do with the ongoing power of the first sort of fear to overtake us, especially when we really want to do something brave. Come, Jesus says, but you know how it goes. We dare the next step, and we're right there, and suddenly our mind kicks in, and the wind comes up, and before we know it, we are sinking fast. That old fear returns, sending us back to where we started, except not. Because having followed him this far, Jesus is right there. His hand immediately catches Peter, catches us, and keeps us from falling too far from his grace. I imagine Jesus smiling and shaking his head as he says to Peter, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" And one last detail. My mother says she bows her head about three times at the end of my prayers because she thinks I should be done, and I'm not quite done. So one last little detail that is very easy to miss, especially given our little faith. The real miracle for Matthew in this story and for the early church and for those of us still in the boat is this. The doubt that caused Peter to sink and Jesus to catch him becomes the occasion for the whole community to confess, "Truly, you are the Son of God."